We're starting here on the top of Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, three lines down. Gemara says, Amar Rabba Bar Shila, Amar Rab Matno, Amar Shmuel. Maseh, betalu et ha-shliyah, bivlad ad asara yamim. So this continues the discussion we had from yesterday, which is, we know that a shliyah, placenta, and after birth, is an indication of a vlad. The question is it an indication of another vlad, or is it connected to the actual fetus that we had born here? So here we had a fetus born, and then 10 days later, there's a discharge of the placenta or the afterbirth. Does that mean that there was another fetus and the shliyah is an indication of that? Or is this connected to the original fetus that was born 10 days ago? V'lo amru tolin, elo b'shliyah ba'a achar ha-vlad. It's only true when the placenta comes out after the vlad. So if it precedes the vlad by a long ways, then we say it's not connected to that vlad. It's only when it's after the vlad do we say that it's connected to the vlad, even even up 10 days later. So Amar Rabba Barbachan Amar Rabbi Yochanan Maseh v'talu et ha-shliyah b'vlad ad chav gimel yomim. For 23 days later, this afterbirth placenta came out and they connected it with the original birth. So Amar Rabbi Yosef ad chav dalet amartalan. You told us up to 24 days. So Amar Rabbi Acha Breid Rabbi Vira Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. The other possibility by the Bach says that this is also a statement by Rabbi Yochanan and not Rabbi Yitzchak. Maseh v'nishtah v'vlad achar chaverod lamed gimel yom. 33 days later is when it came out. Amar Le Rav Yosef again, Lamadalid Amartalon, you told us 34 days. So Gemara says, Ha Nichodaman Damar, Yoledet the Tisha, Yoledet the Mekutaim. That makes sense according to one who says that a woman who gives birth in the 9th month, Yoledet Mekutaim, she doesn't have to have a complete 9th month. Any time during the 9th month, that's considered to be a valid Vlad or a Vlad that will be viable. So then, Mishkachala, that would make sense. We have twins here. Echad nigmarat zuratot sof shiva. The first of the twins completed its gestation period at the end of the 7th month. Echad nigmarat zuratot tchilat tisha. And the second twin completed its gestation the beginning of the 9th month. So that's how you'll have a spread of 33 or 34 days. One is at the tail end of the 7th month and one's at the beginning of the 9th month. And that's how you have these two births with that type of gap between them. Elo the mando amar yoleda the tishai and yoleda the mukutayim. According to the one who says that if you have a 9th month gestation, that you have to complete the 9th month, come out before the end of the 9th month, that's not a viable fetus. Remember that the Gemara believes that a 7-month gestation is viable, a 9-month gestation is viable, 8-month gestation will not survive. So the question here in this, when we say 7th month and 9th month, what does that mean? So now the Gemara is assuming 7 months means a Rashi says, Rashi says that everybody agrees in the 7th month you could have it be that it's less than 7 months. And 9 months, possibilities. One possibility is that it has to be complete through the 9th month, and one is that it could be anywhere during the 9th month. So therefore, we have the next part. So the one who says that the Tishan Yoledet Mukutayim, Ma'ikal Meimar, so the Gemara says, Ipok Shmaitito, you flip them around. Lamed Gimel the Shilyah, and Chav Gimel the Vlad. So the two memorot were slightly different. First one that said, Maseh v'talu et ha-shliyah b'vlad. There was an afterbirth, the placenta that came out 23 days later, and they connected it to the original vlad. That was 23 days. But then the second case was a case of 33. In that case, it was two vladot. It was not a vlad and a shliyah, but rather two separate babies that exited 33 days apart. So the Gemara says, when it comes to the two babies that are 33 days apart, that I can explain because I have an opinion that says that full gestation is 7 months at the end of the 7th month, and then I have gestation in the 9th month, which is the beginning of the 9th month, so I'll have a spread of 33 or 34 days between the two twins that exited. On the other hand, if you hold that by the 9th month, you have to have a complete 9th month in the gestation, then they're going to be a minimum of 60 days apart. So then how do you have these two babies born with that type of gap between them? So the answer is that we're going to flip the Shmaitata and say, Lamed Gimel the Shilyan Chav Gimel the Vlad. They had a placenta afterbirth that came out 33 days after the original birth, and they connected it with the original birth. And then we say there's 23 days between the two fetuses that exited over here, two viable fetuses that exited, but then 23 days over the other. Then what you explain is that they were both born in the 7th month of gestation. One's born in the early part of the 7th month, and one's born in the later part of the 7th month. Because this one holds, this opinion is according to one who says the 9th month, you have to go to full gestation. That's the Gemara's question. The Gemara's question, according to one who says the 9th month must be full gestation. We just said that Rashi says, and he brings from the Gemara later on, that everybody holds that you'll let it design, you'll let it mukutayim. Everybody agrees in the 7th month you don't have to go to full term. Anywhere in the 7th month is fine. So that's way you can have the 23 days between the two babies that are born be totally within that seventh month of gestation? It could be. Tosafot discusses that question. If you look at Tosafot, Eilu leman damar, Einu yolele muktoim, Ma'ika lemeimar, Vim tomar, like you just said, Tzvi, V'neimon denigmar tzurato, V'shtayet shmini. Maybe he finished up in the seventh month, and he hung around until the eighth month, meaning that he completed the gestation, but he just hung around inside. Achitele the rabba tosafa. But later on, there's such an opinion. And Thomas says, Leshomar, the rov amoraim, lately the rabba tosafa. Most Amorim don't hold of that position where you can have a baby that's complete and it just hangs out, meaning that it goes beyond. So it either completed at the end of the seventh month or the end of the ninth month and just hangs around internally for extra time, because that would solve the problem. So Tosafot asks your question, and it does solve the problem, but he thinks that most Amoraim don't subscribe to that opinion. I would say, in addition, and Tosafot says this, yesterday's daf, we don't rely on things that we normally don't see. When it's something that's a common thing, then fine. But if something is uncommon, then we're not going to rely on that to say that, oh, that's what happened here. Here you have to give an explanation. We're not going to try to give an explanation of something that seems outrageous or extraordinary. They were 3 months apart. You had twins that were born 3 months apart. And they're sitting in front of us in the Beit Midrash. These are people you want to speak to. They're right here. Umaniyu, who are they? Yehuda v'Chizkiya bnei Rabbi Chiya. Yehuda and Chizkiya, who are the children of Rabbi Chiya. So Gemara says, V'amamar inisha mitaberet v'chozer mitaberet. Gemara says, now wait, how is it possible that you have these two twins that were born 3 months apart unless the woman was impregnated after she was pregnant already? Because otherwise, how do you get such a big gap or big spread between them? And where it says that's an impossibility, which is something that I didn't have a chance to mention on Friday, but there is a Tosafot on Friday that discusses this issue with regards to whether you can be mitaberet v'chozer mitaberet. And it says, the Rabbeinu Tam, perush ein mitaberet v'chozer mitaberet, v'afilu neifel at shapir. Rabbeinu Tam says that you can't become impregnated again once you're pregnant, and even if it has a non-viable fetus, even if you have a miscarriage, that cannot happen, according to the Rabbeinu Tam. According to Rashi and many of the other Rishonim, it's true you can't have a viable Vlad after one is pregnant. But if you have a non-viable Vlad, a Nefel, it's miscarried along the way, you could get impregnated again. That's a possibility. So Rabbeinu Tam says, based on our Gemara over here, nothing happens. That's it. A woman's pregnant, you can't get impregnated again. So Amar Abaye Tipa Achat Haita, it's very interesting. Abaye says that there was one fertilization, Benitzhalka L'Shtayim. And then it's split into two. Echad nigmarat tzurato b'tchilat zayin, v'chad b'sof tet. One of them completed their gestation at the beginning of the seventh month, and one of them completed their gestation at the end of the ninth month, which would bring them 3 months apart. But they really are, as what we would call today, identical twins. Because it wasn't that the mother ovulated and had two eggs, but rather, they had a single egg that split. And therefore you have identical twins that were pregnant at the same time, and then one came out at the beginning of the seventh month, one came out at the end of the ninth month, and that gives you your 3 month spread. Right, it's true. The Bible says that's the way it happened. Truth is, it could happen. They didn't have this type of knowledge, but you can have twins in two ways. The possibility of the other set of twins is also true. If she ovulated, there were two eggs that they got fertilized, and they're not identical twins, the same thing could have been true. One ended at the end, at the beginning of the seventh month, one was at the beginning of the end of the ninth month. Or the other possibility is that Yehuda and Chizkiya were identical. They were identical twins, and this would have been the explanation for it. Shilya b'bayit, abayit tamei. So this is back to the Mishnah. You find a shilya in the house is tamei because we assume that a shilya came with a vlad. We don't know where the vlad is, but that means you have a leida, you have a birth that was a entity that would be, or cause, tuma in the ohel. So therefore the house is tamei. Don't know about none. Shilya b'bayit, abayit tamei. Lo she shilya vlad, lo she ain shilya, she ain vladima. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yossi, v'Rabbi Yehuda, v'Rabbi Shimon mitaharin. So this makes this Mishnah Adat Yachid, Rabbi Meir, Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir, that's our Mishnah, but we have three Tanaim that argue on him. Amar lo Rabbi Meir, iyatamudeh, don't you agree, shim hotzio b'seifel, they took out the vlad in a bowl, the v'ayta chitzon, shu tahor, that the outside or the outer house is considered to be tahor. Some of them, aval. Aval is a term that's used a number of times in Shas, also in the Torah. Aval means be'emet. Yes, kena davar. That is true. Aval ashimim anachnu. The brothers of Yosef, they use the word aval there, and Rashi translates the same way. Be'emet means that really, we are. V'lama l'fish eino. Why is it that when you take this fetus in the bowl out to the outer area, why is it that it's not tamei over there? Because it doesn't exist. It's not there. It's not in the outer house, then it's not on the inner house as well. So on the hand, Rabbi Meir responds, it's a big difference between one time being dissolved once, from being dissolved twice, or being mashed up once, then being mashed up twice. In the process of being discharged, the fetus underwent duress and trauma, and the likelihood is that that could have disfigured it to the point where it's not considered to be a vlad, they're not considered to be viable. But then again, it was in a bowl, and then it was moved again to the outer house twice, contact twice, or twice where it underwent some certain amount of trauma or movement. It's more likely that that vlad is not considered to be a good enough vlad to be metameh be'ohel. But in the first instance, when there was only one part of trauma or one incident of trauma, Rabbi Meir believes that that could have been a viable vlad. So Rabbi Meir distinguishes between how much this fetus is handled. If the fetus is only handled in the first case where it's discharged and that's it, then it can convey tumah. If it's already handled a second time, that already brings it to the point where it's unlikely to have a consistency or a consideration like a human being to be mitamei di ohel. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Shimon all believe that the fetus here is tahor, and there is no tumah at all, both on the bayit apnimi, the inner house, as well as the outer house. Yatim Rav Papa, acharei de Rav Bibi, kamei de Rav Huna. Rav Papa was sitting behind Rav Bibi, who was in front of Rav Hamnuna. Yatim v'kamar, my time with Rabbi Shimon. What's the reason Rabbi Shimon? Kosavar kol tumah shnitarei ba mimin acher b'teila. If you have any tumah that has other things mixed in with it, that tumah becomes b'teila. So over here you also have, in terms of the discharge of the fetus, you also have the shilya, and the possibilities you also have dam from the leida. All those items will mix together with the fetus, with the vlad, because we don't have no sighting of the vlad. The vlad is somewhere in here, it was dissolved somewhere in here. And because of that, it's b'teila. So that's the reason for Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon is based on the fact that the tumah here is b'teila, and therefore it's not conveying tumah in this ohel because it just doesn't really exist. Amalahu Rapapa. Rapapa spoke up then from behind and says, "Hainu nami taimayu de Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yossi." That must also be the reason for Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. They only explain the reasoning of Rabbi Shimon, and Rapapa pipes up and says, "Oh, that must be the reason for Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda." Achiku alei. They laughed at him. Maishna. What's the difference? Why wouldn't they subscribe to this? They all agree to the same opinion. And if that's the reason for Rabbi Shimon, that'll also be the reason for Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. Pshita. That's really a simple statement that you're making, Rav Papa. You're not really introducing any chiddush here. So I'm Rav Papa. It's a beautiful line. Afilu ka milta lema inish. Even if something simple like that, where they're going to make fun of you, a person should speak up. Lo nishto kamed rabbe. And don't be silent in front of your Rebbe. Don't be bashful in terms of asking questions and making a fool out of yourself to get the right answer. Shum shenamar, because it says, im navalto bihitnasei, if you were foolishly haughty, vim zamotan, if you have evil plans, yadapeh, put your finger to your mouth, do not let them out, do not let them be exposed. Now, the way he's reading it is, im navalto, if you dirted yourself by asking questions, bihitnasei, you'll be raised up. You'll be a Talmud Chacham. You'll be able to answer questions later on in life. On the other hand, in Zamota, if you keep yourself silent and you keep everything inside, then yad lepeh. When people come to ask questions, you'll have your finger on your mouth because you won't be able to answer them. The idea is, lo abayshan lamed, someone who is bashful will not learn. Ask the questions, even if it's going to cause you to be embarrassed. Vazda Rabbi Shimon letameh. Now the Gemara goes back to this idea that Rabbi Shimon's opinion is based on this idea of bitul tumah, because the Tanya, we have a brighter Malo tarva derekev, if you have a spoonful of rot from a mate, shinafalu tocho afar kosho, there's a little bit of dirt that falls into it, tamei, it still remains tamei. Rabbi Shimon, mitaher. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon is mitaher. My time with Rabbi Shimon. What's the reason behind Rabbi Shimon? So Omar, Rabba, the other gus is Rabba. Ashkechidno the Rabbanon, debay Rav. I found the Rabbanon from the base medrash of Rab, the Yafiv Gamre. Iev Sharsh, lo yerbu. Give exactly the amount of rekev, of rat, from the mate that would make it tamei tumat ohel, which is a melo tarvad. So a spoonful. So you have the exact right amount. Then you have a little dirt that drops into it. That dirt will be mivatel, one of the granules of rat. So if you have at least two granules of afar, and they gather together around a single granule of rat, they'll be mevatelet, and now you'll be missing the shi'ur that you need, the minimum shi'ur of melot arvad of a spoonful. So that's what they say. Now you have less than a spoonful. So now it's no longer mitame. V'amina lahu. And I said to them, Adarabo, just the opposite. If shirura. Now you have enough. You have more than enough of what you need. Why don't you say just the opposite? There's much more rekev here. There's much more rod over here. And they should overcome predachat shel afar. They should overcome the one little granule of a fire, and they'll be mevatalit, and you have more than a shear that you need. Now you have a spoonful plus of rekev over here. So Amar Rabba, or you have to say Rabba if you changed the gifts before. I know time with Rabbi Shimon. Let me explain you the reason behind Rabbi Shimon. Sofo kitchilato. The end is like the beginning. Man nitchilato naselo davar acher. Gan gilon is Rashi's gear. So Tosfos gear says gal gilon. Avsofo naselo davar acher. Gan gilon or gal gilon. The translation of this gan gilon or gal gilon is Mivatel. Tosfot says it's Galgilon, which means Davar Niglalimosum, that's mixed up with it. Rashi brings either Batel or Bitul, that other thing is Mivatel, or he brings Davar Achar Mitarevibo Mivatlo, what's mixed in. Lashon Gangilon is Davar Omeid Kinegdo, the Vatlo, something that's in opposition, in contrast, that causes it to be Batel. So basically it's a fancy word for Bitul. But why? Mahi. What's going on over here? The Mahi, Rashi says two possibilities what the question is. What does this mean, that tchilato? What do you say? You said, so folkit tchilato. What is this tchilato? Or the other possibility is, what does it mean, naselo gangilon? What is the meaning of this gangilon? The answer to both of them is this bright, the Tanya. Ezu meit sheish lo rekev. Who is a mate that has this din of rekev? It's Allah l'moshe m'sinai, that if you have a spoonful worth of rekev, then it's metameh, like a mate. That din, when does it apply? When does it manifest itself? Ezu meit sheish lo rekev, ezu meit sheish lo rekev. And where's a mate that does not have that classification? Nikvar arum be'aron, he's buried naked in an aron shel shayish, a sarcophagus, a coffin that was made out of marble, al gav ritzpa shel avanim, or on a floor that was made out of stone. Zeu meit sheish lo rekev, that's a mate that has rekev. And you'll see from the contrast why that is. Vezu meit sheein lo rekev, what's a mate that does not have rekev? Nikvar biksuto, he's buried in his clothing or in a shroud. Obaron shel eitz, or uses a coffin, sarcophagus of wood. A gavrit special of venim, or on a floor that's made out of bricks. Zomate, shein lo rekev. That mate does not have a rekev. Velo amru rekev, el mate bilvad. That's only true of a mate. Aval de mute harug dolo. But if someone is murdered or killed, then they do not have a din of rekev. And that is because the mate is considered to be chaser. And if you're chaser, there's no din of rekev. That's the halacha of Moshe Mitzrayim. It has to be the entirety of the mate in order to create the rekev that is problematic. Basic principle of the Braita is that if you want to have rekev a mate, it has to be pure and absolute rekev. There can't be anything else mixed in with it. So in the cases where it's buried in marble without any clothing, there's nothing else that is decomposing over here. The only thing that is decomposing is the mate. So if it's just the mate, then a melot arvad of rekev will have this din. If the mate has a shroud, it has a coffin made out of wood, it has these levenim, all of which decompose along with the mate, then when you pick up the melot arvad, there'll be something else mixed in with it. If you have something mixed in with it, then it no longer has a din of melot arvad rekev. No longer has that din. That's what the Braita lays out for us. And that's Rabba's opinion. That's what it means. Sofo ketchilato. Just like in the beginning, when a mate is buried there, it will only have a status of rekev if it's the mate alone and nothing else mixed in with it. So too, b'sofo. Here, where there's already melot arvad rekev, you already have a spoonful of the rekev, you'll only have that classification if there's nothing else mixed in with it. If something else mixed in with it, it does not have that classification. So that's the answer to Rabbi Shimon's opinion here. This is why Rabbi Shimon's opinion is guided not by bitul, but by this special din, by rekev. Rekev has to be pure, unadulterated rekev. Otherwise, it's not classified as the halacha Moshe Mitzrayim rekev that has the tumah like tumat amet. So now Gufa, the Gemara wants to investigate this more. Melot arvad rekev shenafalo tocho afar koshu tamei. Rabbi Shimon matar. Then the next case there is melot arvad rekev shenitpazer b'bayit. Habayit tamei. Rabbi Shimon mitaher. If you have a spoonful worth of the rot from the a decomposition from the mate that spread around the house is tamei, and Rabbi Shimon is mitaher. Mitzricha, we need both of these cases to be told to us. Di Ashminan Kamaito, if you only told me the first case, why Kamei Rabbanim Mishum de Machnif? The Rabbanim say that's the case because it's all together. The Melot Arvad Rekev is all together, even though there's a little fire there, but it's all together in one place. Aval Nitpazev, it's spread around the whole house. Ein Bamodu Lo LeRabbi Shimon. Maybe they agree with Rabbi Shimon, the Ein Ma'il, but Chozer Ma'il. You can't have two ohalot that join together to bring together this malot arvad. So the assumption being here, the way Rashi reads it, is that there are two houses here that are connected somehow. So there's an ohel over half the shiur of tarvad, malot arvad, another house that's ma'il over the other malot arvad, and then the two houses are connected somehow. So that gives you a, between the two houses, you now have an ohel on top of a full shiur of malot arvad. If you came to that, to saying, dein ma'il v'chozer ma'il, had you only told me the second case about Ohel, Rabbi Shimon dein mahil b'chozer mahil. Over there, Rabbi Shimon says that you're not chozer umahayil, because they're too spread out. It's too much to ask to say that it's a both of five plus, there are two all low tier that are all over this, about baha. In the case where it's all together in a single spoon, maybe over there he would agree to the position of the Rabbanan. So that's why we needed both of them. Tani idach, here is a third machloket between them. Malot arvad ba'od, you have a spoonful plus of afar beit hakvarot from the dust or dirt, earth of the beit hakvarot to the cemetery, tamei. B'Shimon mitaher, but Rabbi Shimon is mitaher. Now this malot arvad claims, Rashi claims that this is a case where the mate was buried b'ksuto, that the mate was buried within its clothing, and now you have the rot of this mate, the rekiv of this mate, plus you have the ksut mixed in. Now, if you took just the spoonful worth, then you could not have rekev that is under the din of Alokha Moshe Sinai because of the ksut. Because of the clothing or the shroud that was mixed in there in the decomposition, you will not have the shear, the requisite shear that you need. On the other hand, if you take more than a spoonful, then you're almost guaranteed to get the rekev that you want because you'll have a spoonful worth of rekev plus, that plus will take care of the shroud that was there, whatever was mixed in from the shroud. So that's the way Rashi reads it. On the other hand, the Rashbam says, Benikvar Rom, this is a case where he was buried naked, meaning that there was no problem of a ksut or a shroud that caused the problem here. They were put into a kuch, into one of these hollowed out caverns in the wall where they buried the meitim. But they used to line the inside of those walls with sid, with lime. So when they lined it, after the meit was rotting, you only have malay tarvad, then it gets seeped in or get mixed in a little bit with the lime. So that's the problem over here, according to their shabbat. Either way, what you're saying here is that if you get a spoonful plus, then you don't have the problem anymore, because then you're guaranteed to get the spoonful you need of rekev by getting a spoonful plus, because majority of what's here is this rot. Just there's a little bit of other decomposition mixed in, and therefore by going over the shiur, you're guaranteed to get the shiur that you need.
Is the Rashbam rejecting Rashi, or is
it
another?
The Rashbam rejects Rashi because of the Braita that we saw before. The Braita said before, if you start out with a shroud there, there is no din of melot arvad. If the mixing hands up, the decomposition happens up front, then there's no din. So what the Rashbam is trying to create is a chitimtze where the decomposition happens and then the mixing only happens later. So he has a full decomposition of the mate, and then it only mixes with the lime. Versus Rashi's case where it's up front, then there's no din, melot arvad. It's because of the bright of the din. That's why he's trying to differentiate between himself and Rashi. But then we still have Rabbi Shimon mitaher in this case. So what's the reasoning behind the Rabbanon's position? Like we've been explaining till now, if you exceed the shear that you need, you will have the minimum shear within that. So now, Rabbi Shimon's reasoning is the same here again, which is, just like in the beginning, if you have something else mixed in with it, there's no din, period, of melot arvad. So to in the end, if you get something else mixed in with it, there's no longer a din of melot arvad. Melot arvad is a din in rekev alone. If there's anything mixed in with it, the halacha of Moshe Sinai falls away. So that's the reasoning for Rabbi Shimon again here. Then, now we've had a number of instances where Rabbi Shimon has that opinion based on what Rabba explained to us or Rabba explained to us before. Let's go back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that when you have a discharge of a shilyah, then that's automatically a bayit tamei, because ain shilya below vlad. But then Rabbi Shimon says, Rabbi Shimon mitaher. Why is Rabbi Shimon mitaher in our Mishnah? Where do you have over there? What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Shimon? How does it connect to what we said over here? And that's what the Gemara says. Rabbi Shilya my taimo. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Shimon's opinion here by shilya? So Rabbi Yochanan mishum bito berov naguba. It's a din in bito. But as Rabbi Yochanan the tamei. And that's Rabbi Yochanan according to his position, which is Damar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Amru Davar Echad. The two of them said the same thing. Rabbi Shimon Adamran, Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah, which says that there's a bitul berov here. We'll get back and explain what that means. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Ditznan. We have a Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Behima Gasa, Sheshafach Hararet Dam. A large animal that discharged some like brick of blood, some large solid section of blood. Harizu tikaver. That section of blood that she discharges, this is the firstborn, quote unquote, of this animal. So therefore that's kedushat bechora, and you have to bury it. Uptura mina bechora. The next child that is born to this animal will not have a din of bechor. Betani, Rabbi Chiya, Allah, Rabbi Chiya qualified that and said, Eina mitama lo b'magav lo b'masa. The discharge is not mitameh. So now the Gemara says, you have an inconsistency here. If the discharge is not mitameh, then it's not a vlad. If it's not a vlad, then there was no bechor, and the next one that comes out is the bechor. You can't have it that the discharge here is classified as the bechor, and therefore there's no din of bechor after this for this animal, and then yet say that that which discharge is not a vlad. Those two are incongruent. They are inconsistent. Then why do you bury it? It's not a vlad. Then you don't need to bury it. It doesn't have any kedusha. To tell you that it is patur min habechora. They make a big deal about it, so they bury it so that everybody knows that it's patur min habechora. Alma vlad ma'alyu. The reason you're burying it is because it has kedushat bechor, which means it's a vlad. Vamai tani Rabbi Chiya. And then back the other way. Then why does Rabbi Chiya say, inu mitama lo b'magav lo b'masa? How can you not have tumat nevela if it is a vlad? If it's Rabbi Yochanan, mishin bitul barov nagupa. So din habitul barov. This bitul barov is that the discharge is not alone in being there. You have the dam leida, that's nidraba alav, that comes out, all the blood that's discharged at the time of the birth, over this fetus that's been dissolved somehow, and it exceeds the fetus that's there. And therefore you have bitul barov. And the same thing was true by the shulya that's discharged with a vlad that is nimoach. Even though the vlad might have a status of vlad, in of itself, there's the other liquids and discharge, the shilya and the blood that all come out together with it. They together are mevatel that vlad that's there, and that's Rabbi Shimon Shita. The same thing that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is saying by the Beima Gasa. That's what Rabbi Shimon is saying in our mission over here with the shilya and the vlad. Amar Rabbi Ami, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, the mother of Rabbi Shimon, Shimot Tmei Aleida. Then our Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon agrees that the mother, the one who gives birth to this, is Tmei Aleida. Why? There was a vlad that exited. You're talking about two different issues. Rabbi Shimon agrees a vlad exited over here, just like the Chachamim. His only question is, that which was discharged is it mitameh. That's batul berov. That batul berov makes it that it no longer has the ability to mitameh because it's as if it doesn't exist. But in terms of the woman having a birth here, she gave birth to a vlad. A vlad exited her body. First of all, it's not necessarily true that it was nitbatel before it came out, because it's part of the flow. The whole birthing process brings out dam with it. Possibly that wasn't batel beforehand. Number two is, even if it is inside of her, the leida may not require it to be an independent entity. All we need to know is that a vlad exited her. That might make her tmea leida, irrespective of what else is coming out at the same time. So Amara Usabo the Rabbi Ami, Asabri the Cha, time of the Rabbi Yochanan. I'm going to explain to you why Rabbi Yochanan says about Rabbi Shimon that this is the din. Amakra, Isha ki tazriya v'yolda zachar. A woman who is impregnated and then gives birth to a male. Afilo lo yelada l'kein shizriya. Even if that which is discharged from the woman is in the same format as that how she was impregnated, mea leida. She has a din of tumat leida. So even if it comes out in a liquid form, the way that she was impregnated through a liquid form, that has the same din of leida, and then she'll be mea tumat leida. Vishlaka v'shamar, shfir shetarfuhu b'meimav, nasek meit shenitbalbala tzurato. You have a shfir sack that was mixed up within its water. There was water inside of it, and then it was mixed, scrambled. That has the same din as a meit, a regular niftar, that nitbalbala tzurato, that has lost its form. So we know a meit shenitbalbala tzurato no longer has a din of meit, of tumata meit. So what Reish Lakish is explaining is that the same thing should be true by a shfir, shetarfuah b'meimav. So the two should be equivalent in him. So I'm really Rabbi Yochanan, the Reish Lakish. Meit shenitbalbala tzurato min olam d'tohor. You have a premise already that a meit whose surah, who's been disfigured in some way, is tahor, because they're no longer recognizable. Ilema meha, damar Rabbi Shabtai, yamar Rabbi Yitzchak, migadla'a. From Ilema Rabbi Yitzchak, migadla'a. In other places in Shas, you have Mary from Magdalene. Rashi mentions two places in Shas, that she was magadla'a. That's the name of the place, Magdalene. Samar Rabbi Shabtai, umay meit shenisraf. A mate that was burnt, singed, but the shildo, its skeleton, its shape is still in form. Tamei. Maseaya. There was an incident like this. The large doorways and the small doorways. So this case, so this is a din in olalot. The din in olalot is if you have a mate inside the house, the entire house is tamei because it's an ohel. The other thing that is also is what about the doorways, the windows and the doorways. The windows and the doorways are considered to be somewhat external to the house. And because of that, they will not have the din of tumah. Since they don't have a din of tumah, we assume that what's in the house is tamei, something in the doorways are going to be tohor. But the problem is that the mate has to leave the house. The mate's not going to stay in the house, it's going to leave the house. When it leaves the house, it's going to pass through one of those doorways. So which of those doorways is classified as the doorway? So the Gemara says, any doorway that is a possibility has a din of tumah. Tachim gedolim, the large doorways here are tamei. The tachim tanim, the small doorways, which are less than 4x4 tfachim, those are not tamei. Now, doorways can be windows, anything, exits, any egress from the house. Now, here what we're talking about is not passing of tumah. Tumah can pass from one oil to another oil with just a tefach. If you have two houses that are connected by a poteach tefach, the tumah can pass between two houses. This is a specific din in tachim, in doorways. It has to do with the egress of the mate from the house. So over here, the only possibility of taking the mate out of the house is through one of the bigger doorways. Why? Because shildo kayem. The skeleton is still intact. The skeleton intact, you have to take it out in a whole piece. Then, something less than 4x4 tefachim is not going to allow you for an egress. So therefore, only doorways that are big enough that you could exit from are tamei. Doorways that are smaller don't have that consideration. And now you want to be midayek. You want to infer from this. Taima de shildo kayemet. The only reason you're tamei over here is because the skeleton or the shape is intact. Halav achi tahor. Without that, it would be tahor. So that's what Reish Lakish wants to. Rabbi Yochanan is saying, Reish Lakish, this is the reasoning why you say that if nidbalbalat surato, if the mate is disfigured in some way where it's not recognizable, it no longer has a din of tumata mate, is because of this. You say that if it was burnt or singed to the point where the skeleton wasn't there, the shape of the human wasn't there anymore, then it would be tahor. Because here the Mishnah says, mate, shenisraf bishildo kayemet. So it sounds like that's a requirement, that shildo kayemet. So it says, adarabo, that's not a good deal. That's not a good inference. Dok mina lahaydisa. Why don't you infer the other way? Shildo kayemet ho de taralo ptachim tanim. When the form is still there, the skeleton is still intact, that's why the smaller egresses are tahor. Because you have a whole mate and you can't get it out through the less than 4x4 tefachim. But, halav achi, tachim tekananim nami tmeim. No, the thing is tamei tumat mate, but now you can take it out anyway because it's been disintegrated. Disintegrated, you could take it out through a window that's less than 4x4 tefachim also, because there's no shildo kayemet. The din of shildo kayemet could be for one of two reasons. The shildo kayemet could be the reason for that it's tamei tumat mate here, or shildo kayemet could be the reason why the tachim gedolim are tmeim, and the ktanim are torim. You inferred from that, oh, that means that it has to do with the shape, tells you it's tamei. Infer the other way, which is that the only reason the smaller egresses are tahor is because shildo kayemet. If it wasn't kayemet, it would be tamei. Just the smaller doorways would also be tamei. Dechol chad v'chad, chazid afuke, chad v'chad eiver. Every one of the windows or these smaller doorways is now available as an egress for each limb that's not intact here. So Amar le Ravina le Ravashi, Rabbi Yochanan der Markiman. Who's Rabbi Yochanan subscribing to? Who's Rabbi Yochanan's position like that, even when the mate does not have shildo kayemet, that we say that there is still tumata mate here? It's ki Rabbi Eliezer. That's van efer srufin. The dust, the ashes of a person that was burnt. Blazomer shiurei beroba. That's roba akav. Roba akav means it's the normal din of a mate. You need a roba akav of a mate in order to be tamei tumat ohel. So over here, he's saying that a burnt body has that same din. So that's exactly like Rabbi Yochanan saying. Rabbi Yochanan saying you don't need the body intact. You just need there to be a roba akav of this dust or these ashes from the mate that was burnt is enough to be metamei tumat ohel, even though she'll go eno kayemet. And Rabbi Yochanan is subscribing to that position of Rabbi Eliezer. We might ask, hey, dami mate shenifsaraf shildo kayemet. How do you have an instance where the mate was burnt, but it's still intact? So Amar Abaye, kagon shesarfu al gabi katavla. The mate was burnt on top of a katavla. Katavla is an or shaluk. It's a heavily worked or boiled piece of skin that is fireproof. In their day, it was the equivalent of what's called fireproofing. So if you threw this over something, it was fireproofed. If you burnt something on it, the item that was on it burnt, but it did not burn. So therefore, you'll have the ashes here on top of it, and the shildo, the shape, will be intact. Or, Rabba Amar, Kigon Shesarfu Al Gabei, a podrin. They burnt it on top of, a podrin is similar to what we saw by Rekav I made before, Evin Shayish, marble. Burnt it on top of marble, where marble doesn't burn. So therefore, the only thing you have here is the shape of the human that's going to be left, or the skeletal remains of the human, and it won't spread around. And then the last one is, Ravina Amar could go into Ichruche, Ichruche. And it could be a case where it was singed. It wasn't burnt. The body wasn't burnt up, but rather singed. So therefore, the skin or whatever is around the body could have been consumed, but the skeleton, the shape of the body is still intact. So Safod claims over here by the Katavla, it's a case where it's shaped like the body. The Katavla is shaped like the body. And then when you burn it, what you're left with are ashes that are filling in the shape of the body. So there you have Shildat Kayamet, because you still have intact the shape of the body, because this Katavla is shaped like the body, and it leaves a trail of ashes that are in the shape of the body, and that's Shildat Kayamet as well. Just in summary, we have today what we really discuss is this opinion of Rabbi Shimon and the reasoning behind the positions of Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara talked about Shulya Babayit Abayit Tamei. We saw the machlok between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. And then we brought down the Malo Tarvad Rekev above that had a little afar fall into it. And then we had the position of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon's mitahar in all these cases by Malo Tarvad because of his reasoning that it has to be pure, unadulterated Rekev. Then we had to apply that to our case in the Mishnah of Shulya. Apply it to our case, the Mishnah of Shulya, how come over here there's no Tumata Meit? He said that has to do with the Din of Batel Berov. So then we moved on to Reish Lakish making a statement, if you have Shfir, that got it all mixed up, that has the same Din as a Meit Shenit Bal Ba'ala, Surato. A Meit, a cadaver that is somehow defaced, it's not recognizable as a human being anymore. There's no longer a Din of Tumata Meit there, so too by a Shfir that's mixed up. It's the same idea. It's all mixed up, it's not recognizable anymore. Then you had Rabbi Yochanan's challenge to that because he doesn't think that Rabbi Shlokesh's din of Nitbal Balal Surato is true. He thinks that even if the mate is Nitbal Bal, it still has a din of Tumata Mate. And therefore, obviously, he won't extend that din to the din of a shvir because he doesn't have the underlying din that Rabbi Shlokesh is premising it on. Okay, we'll stop here.